catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is going on, everybody, in rugby land? This is Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt with the Rugby Rant Podcast Show, and I have got an amazing slate of guests tonight for this particular episode. It is 172. We're going to be talking some great things. I'll introduce that in a minute, but I want to introduce the amazing guest that I've been so excited to have join the pod this week. I've been looking forward to it for weeks, knew it was on the slate, and I am happy to get some well-seasoned vets in rugby podcast world on the show. And I'm going to introduce them one by one. I'm going to start first to my left. Yeah, that's it. Over there. With another. Then Wendy Young. Wendy Young is your scrum half connection. And she also does a fabulous job to the brass and the MLR at doing the commentating every weekend in the MLR. Wendy, how you doing?
I'm great, Rob. It's great to be here. Great to be on the show again, and appreciate the intro.
Absolutely, and just know that the door is always welcome to all three of you. Of course, James is doing a bit filling in this season. We love to have him, but both Wendy and TJ have an absolute green door to come in whenever they want. And I'm going to go down over there, down that way, to none other than Mr. MLR Stats. You can check it out on Twitter. You can check it out on Instagram. And I think he has some space, too, on some other platforms. But he is well-known, and Wendy has really turned the commentators onto Mr. MLR Stats, James Dealey. James, how the hell are you, mate?
Rob, thank you. Thank you, everybody. Yeah, I'm doing well. It's been a few weeks since I've been on, so happy to come back. And Wendy, I'll slip you the cash for giving me all those little referrals. No, it's
just a rugby favor. That's all I want.
Venmo accepted. And finally, last but certainly not least, one of my favorite dudes to hang with. We got an opportunity to do it a couple of years ago. It's got to happen again sometime, mate. It's none other than the man from the Bonus Point podcast. Does a great job at really talking about stuff happening down there in the Pacific where rugby is hot and heavy. And he has now started I've got to make sure I get this right, Rugby Football Club LA fan podcast. I think I got it right. It was a mouthful. TJ Olson, mate, what's going on in your sector of the world?
Well, trust me, it's been a mouthful as well for me to try and get the words and letters together at RFCLA. So that's why I wear it on my head every day. But no, thank you for letting me join the podcast again. I love coming on the show every time and shooting the fun with all of you and these amazing guests to chat about everything North American rugby. So let's get straight into it, mate. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm buzzing about this one. And I know you guys each bring your own slate of knowledge to the Bills. So that's why I want to get after it. So folks that don't know, here's what we got on tap. We're going to hit you with Around the Pitch, things that maybe are not so well known that are happening in North America in the rugby universe. And then we're going to come at you with the rant afterwards. And the rant is going to be very specifically focused on the women's game. We're going to hit you with Pacific Four. We're going to hit you with the new pro rugby league that's going to be happening in 2025. I think it's WER, Women's Elite Rugby. And we'll be talking D1 and D2 club rugby finals as we're getting close to crowning a national champion. So just a moment around the bend. We're going to be hitting you with Around the Pitch. Stick with us. Sorry. All right. A little technical difficulties. I'm not as quality as Scott is at running the production. So we're going to hit you with Around the Pitch. We're going to hit it, you know, one at a time. And I'm going to start first with none other than the fine announcer to my left, Wendy Young. So let me take those other brothers off and we'll hit Wendy here around the pitch. Let me go remove.
All right, around the pitch, I've got the 2024 Mary Graham All-Star Tournament. It's going to be December 7th and 8th. We will have our cup and plate competition like we've done in the past. So 8 teams. We've got teams already from the Midwest Capital, Mid-America, Southwest, and the Panthers. And I'm going to work with TJ to get some Pacific folks there as well. So another opportunity for women's high-performance rugby in Austin, Texas.
I just thought I'd represent the Canadians and give a shout out to the Atlantic Privateers, formerly known as the Atlantic Selects, who traveled down to Quincy, Massachusetts to take on the Free Jacks Academy. And they won decisively 47-12 for their first game of the year. And they are opening their season at home with 2 games against the Oshawa Vikings this weekend on Friday, April 26th and Sunday, the 28th. Anyone in Atlantic Canada that's a fan of rugby, you've got to be there. Their privateers are looking like a really class organization and one to keep an eye on.
I'm going to come at you with 3 of Around the Pitch points. Pacific South, to start right in my backyard. Under-23s are holding their second identification camp in San Diego from 8:30 to 10:30 on April 28th. I think this will be a great opportunity to accommodate also people that want to go watch the USA Women's Eagles versus Canada match at Dignity Health that day. So if you're interested in attending, it will be at Robb Field Recreation Center in San Diego, and we'll give just everyone an opportunity to come out and support women's rugby in the afternoon. A few hours north in Northern California, the NorCal under-23s will host a scrimmage on May 19th to select a team to then play the Pacific Northwest under-23s team on June 8th. Those two teams are Spitfires. They're both amazing teams and always compete at nationals. If you want to compete for a spot in this NorCal team and hopefully get an invite to nationals at Boston, please reach out to Michelle over at Pac Coast Grizzlies at their Instagram page. And the last one, just want to touch on the D1 Elite Final and some of the collegiate rugby, because we are going to be talking about club rugby. Want to give those players their roses. The D1 Elite Final, Life University finally got their win over Lindenwood. It's been a long few years for Life University to finally win their D1 Elite Championship. The Life was able to stay in the fight without having the lead in all the game, but be sure to watch other women's collegiate finals in Houston as GCU takes on Stanford in the D1 final, and my own favorite, Cal Poly Slough, taking on Eckerd in the D2 matchup.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much for that, TJ. And our order is a little bit out of order, which is fine. but some great stuff by all of you guys, just introducing our rugby fandom to what's happening around the pitch. Real quick, as we touch upon some of these pieces, I love, James, the MLR connection that we have with Rugby Canada and New England Free Jacks, the fact that there's still activity happening in North America in spite of the demise of the Toronto Arrows is wonderful to see, and it's great to see that connection being made in the upper northeast of the United States. So thank you for that. Love hearing about it. So keep it coming. And, of course, you know, Wendy, you're always so plugged in, and it's great to hear about what's happening down there in your neck of the woods. That tournament sounds like an absolute cracker. It should be a lot of fun. Is that an open tournament or is that an invitation only?
It is an open tournament for GU All-Star teams. So that's our goal. We've had a club teams in the past fill the bracket out, but we are trying to mimic the ITTs or the NASCs of the past. So we do have one opening, and that's where we're hoping for a Pacific, or I know we've got some other regions that could come as well. There's some smaller ones that could come to the tournament. Rocky Mountain, for instance, we'd love to have a Rocky Mountain or a Frontier as well. But yeah, it's a great tournament, and Midwest has won the last couple of years, so we're all looking to knock them off their post also. I need my TRU toast to come through. Let's go. Yeah.
I think Wendy was making some hints.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. Pacific is tough. I know you guys play in the spring, our tournament's in the winter. I get it. It's tough. It's the same story for Rocky Mountain and Frontier. It's snowing, so it's so hard for them to train. Right. So that's why we've had a tough time. But when you look at the calendar, if we have it any other time of the year, it just doesn't work. So that's why we've picked December.
100%. I'm going to start my wheels turning and get someone out there, whether it's a joint California team or whether we just come pack south and straight away and try and compete for it. I'm down. Let's get it rolling.
I love it, TJ. Let's do it.
And the eternal problem of American or North American rugby, geography and seasonality rears its ugly head once again. But yep. I appreciate that you're trying to work around that. You know, obviously a unified calendar is something that would make things a lot easier for the rugby world in North America. And TJ, man, I mean, I love the fact that you're talking about some select sides there. And of course, it would be awesome to see one compete in the tournament down there in Texas. And some great stuff. Any news out of LA? I'm kind of just kind of curious what's shaking with fans around the LA franchise.
I think it's starting to build back up again. Like you're starting to see all the old fandom start to boom again since the demise of the Giltinis. I think people out here are really hungry for rugby, but I think it takes a little bit of time to get the wheels turning. But I think we're starting to pick up traction. I think RFCLA are doing a really good job with their social media and also just keeping people engaged with teams previously have done really poor with that in the past. And I think we've got a really interesting group of guys and starting to get some more in-depth work in the community. So I think if we stay on this path, I think SoCal rugby is going to be thriving again and hopefully another championship coming to the MLR in LA.
Well, let's hope that either the Hounds or NOLA win that before LA does. But, nevertheless, it's funny you mentioned that because I actually had a great conversation with owner Peter Sickle on Saturday when LA was visiting the Hounds in Dogtown in Bridgeview. And what a great gentleman of the sport, man. I mean, mm-hmm. He's really looking to grow and expand that sport at the grassroots level all the way up to the MLR in the greater Los Angeles area. So shout out to Peter for all that he's doing by bringing a franchise out there. Good things are happening. I love to see it. And before we let you go, just want to throw a big shout out. Punkus Harnett was the winner of the Rugby Rant Super Brew contest brought to you by Shop MLR from the folks at Rugby Now. They don't have this kit in up there yet. Hopefully soon. I'm told there's going to be some other great kit coming. So, if you're just getting involved, that's okay. You can win a $25 gift card to Rugby Now if you win the week. Parkus Arnett has won the second time the second time this year. I think he won week 4 and week 8. So he's got some great gear. He's going to probably buy some Seattle gear coming up. And with that, before we come to the rugby rant portion of the show, we're going to get a word from one of our sponsors because, we got to pay some bills. So we'll be back in just a second with the rant, talking women's rugby, both internationally and professionally and nationally. There's a lot of stuff happening. We'll be right back.
When we pick up the ball, we also pick up a legacy. A legacy that stretches beyond your current team. A legacy built on the backs of those who came before you with hard work. And for those who will come after you, we promise it won't be easy. But we'll be there, supporting you on and off the field.
We'll be right back. I am just not as smooth as Scott, the big guy Farrar, with my fingers and this whole production component. So we're working on it, folks. All right, this is how it's going to work. We're going to start with Pacific Four Talk first. I'm basically going to take Wendy's job for at least for the day and be the scrum half. I'm going to rely upon these folks here to be, you know, that first receiver to get the ball and take it running. So I'm going to really, you know, get them involved in the discussion. But we're going to talk Pacific Four first. So let me introduce this, folks. For those people that are living under a rock or an old rugby ball that's, you know, crusty and the bladder won't even, you know, stay inflated. Pacific Four starts, Wendy, what on the 28th, if I'm not mistaken, right, guys? We got it coming up here.
Sunday.
This weekend. Yeah, Sunday.
I'll be attending that game. I can't wait.
You yes. are attending the game. Nice. Yeah, nice. And where are your seats at there, TJ?
So I don't even know. I just bought them so fast. I don't even care where I'm sitting. I just get to watch women's rugby. It's awesome, mate.
Right.
I looked once today for house. Fun, and the seats in the middle are like almost gone. I was like, yes, it's awesome.
That's tough. That's great to see.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about that kind of, you know, at the back end of things, just, you know, attendance and what kind of expectations we have. But before we do that, let's get a little bit into the lineup. You know, week one, one game happening, USA versus Canada. I think James, look at James, he's sporting his own, you know, his promo of his team, Rugby Canada.
Absolutely, of course.
Yeah, and are we expecting a full lineup, you know, with the full complement of Rugby Canada ladies? James?
Well, I don't know. I guess it would depend. A lot of the Canadian women's side are playing in the Premiership over in the UK. I'm not sure exactly how conflicting that a lot of those games are this weekend. But I would hope for a near full strength squad. They want to start this tournament off on the right foot, especially against the States. I mean, it's against the States.
What are you trying to say?
You know exactly what I'm saying.
I felt a tone. but I haven't looked at emojis lately, so maybe I'm misreading the tea leaves. Nevertheless, yeah, this Sunday, USA Canada in Carson, California. As TJ mentioned, he'll be there, and that's a doubleheader, if I'm not mistaken, TJ, right?
You are correct. Yeah, RFCLA will also be playing, I believe, against the Free Jacks. So yeah, it'll be a good two solid games.
It's a good game.
I can't wait to see it. Yeah.
Do me a favor, get out the I'm wearing an NOLA jersey. Get out the voodoo doll and put a freaking hex on the Free Jacks, please. While you're out there, maybe stab that you know voodoo doll a couple times for me. Not that I wish any ill will on Josh Larry Larson. I love that guy; he's a great dude. But I you know would like to see the Hounds get in the first place, and NOLA needs some help right now. So on with it. Then we get into week two, the 10th and 11th of May. New Zealand plays the United States in Hamilton, New Zealand. Australia plays Canada in Sydney, Australia. Those two should be some pretty phenomenal games in week two. Week three, the 17th and 18th of May, USA plays Australia in Melbourne. New Zealand plays Canada in Christchurch. That would be a good one. I think the crowd will be absolutely electric there. And then on the back end, week four, the 24th of May, New Zealand plays Australia in what is called the O'Reilly Cup in North Harbour, New Zealand. So let's go around the horn here, and I'm going to start first with TJ, on my left. And let's just talk about what are the expectations. Like, and let's think about it from two veins. You know, who's going to win this thing? That might be an easier
shocker.
Yeah, that might be easier said. I get it, but you know, we got to talk about something. But what are the expectations for, you know, Australia, Rugby Canada, and the United States? What do they have to do to show that they're taking a step forward in this tournament? So I'm going to start none other with TJ on my left.
Well, I think there's a couple of things you got to think about. I think from a rugby specific standpoint, I think the US showed big points against their last match against South Africa. I think they had a lot of good opportunities when they utilized their decision making and their phase play, and they opted for a lot of good opportunities in their kick strategy. So I think that's going to be something that I know Shone, the coach, will want to go on through and power on to into their next game against Canada. I think their set piece accuracy and their platform needs some consistency. They had a few miscues in their lineout, and I think that will be a big portion to really get them going and get them an opportunity to utilize the phase play. But I think the main parts that they need to watch out for specifically are going to be their delivery from their ruck and their one-on-one tackles. I think Canada regularly have a heavy defensive presence, and I think James put it pretty eloquently, is it's like it's against the US. They're going to be coming gunning for every single phase. So I think Olivia Ortiz or whoever they name as their scrum half, I think last week she took a little bit too long in a few occasions from the base of the ruck. So I want to make sure there's that smooth delivery straight in there. And then also the body height on defense. I think the US did a great job when it came to two-player tackles. I think they stopped it very well with a very physical South African team. But when it came to one-on-one tackles, I think they gave up a lot of easy yardage just due to their body height alone. So I think if they stay on top of those facets and execute at a high percentage, I think they should be going home with a victory. I think definitely the schedule and the players that are available in the Canadian team will also play a factor because they're a great side to play against. But I think I'm picking the US for this one. I think they've got an opportunity, especially with the crowd that's coming.
Wow. Look at that. I like the bold move by the man from the bonus point. That's cool. That'll be interesting. Worth a watch for sure. Now that TJ has laid down the gauntlet to none other than James, the stat MLR stats man Dealey. James, let's get Rugby Canada angle involved here. How do you answer TJ's accusation, shall we say?
Accusation. Well, listen, DJ is absolutely right that the US can perform, and they are going to be on their home soil. They're going to be down in LA. They are going to be in front of a home crowd. I'm not sure how many traveling Canadians are going to be there. Hopefully a lot, but you never know. But listen, Canada haven't had as much regular international fixtures as many of the other sides, as most of the other sides in this competition. I don't think... Yeah, they finished fourth in the world in the World Cup in 2021, which was played in New Zealand. They're ranked fourth in the world right now, just ahead of Australia and a few places above the US. But like, it's going to be a good game, I think. Their last game against the US, I think, was pretty convincing. I think it was a 30-point victory near it, more or less, 45-7. There you go. But as TJ brought up, and as I mentioned already, it really does depend on the selection. You know, I genuinely think that Sophie Dugoody is one of the best players in the world. If that caliber of player is available, I'm not sure the United States has much of a chance.
Yeah.
If they're not available, it will give great opportunity to some of the other up-and-comers in the Rugby Canada system. Now, Rugby Canada system, quite a lot of people laugh quite a lot. The men's side is a disaster. The women's side is an absolute gem. So focus on that. It's the best we've got at the minute. And I really think that we're gonna take it to the States. It might help Canada that they're playing away.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, James, and maybe you can kind of shed some light on this. It wasn't but a couple of years ago, there was that top-down review that was done of Rugby Canada, and it kind of stemmed from things that came out of the women's side of the game, and you would have expected the women's side of the game to be in a little bit of a disarray, but really the ladies from Canada have answered the call very well with, again, like you said, a fourth place showing there at the Rugby World Cup. What have they gotten right there?
I think that it might just be doing the complete opposite of what they've done for the men's game. Because they've done
George
Costanza wrong
approach.
Pretty much. They've done everything wrong for the men's game, which is a pain to see. But this is it's almost like the failures of the men's team is highlighting the success of the women's team. Because, like, listen, yes, we've disappointed. Yes, we didn't qualify for the World Cup. We've failed miserably qualifying for the World Cup in France. But look at our women's team. We're competing for the bloody first place in the Women's World Cup. And I don't know the minutiae of the decision making within Rugby Canada, but it does seem like they've realized our women are the backbone of our program at the minute. We need to push them as much as possible.
Yeah, and it's almost like what's happening with US, what's happened with USA Soccer, right? Where the women really showed out, and demonstrated the world that the United States can be a powerhouse in the sport. And like, okay, if we can do it, it's time for the men to step up their game. And I know Wendy is absolutely salivating at the opportunity to talk a little bit. And I have a question for particularly for you, Wendy, here when you're done. But you know, give us your thoughts.
Yeah, I think TJ and James both brought up really great questions. And man, TJ, coming out of the gate with a USA win, I'm going to have to be a little bit more reserved. And I am looking for a good performance like we did against South Africa. And I think the key here is what James has mentioned about the review and what Rugby Canada has done has been great. And they have absorbed their 7s and 15s programs back together, where ours are still separate. We sometimes will see our Olympians come over, but not very often. We'll sometimes get a Lev Kelter. We got her for the World Cup. I'd love to see her in the works. I mean, who doesn't want to see Ilona Meyer on the 15 squad? Like, I would love that, right? So I think that's where we have to do some more work. I think our programs need to work together again, share resources. And, you know, talking to Emily Bidewell and Sione about this, they both want it. It's just the logistics of it, right? And making sure we're not overusing those resources, players, really, and making sure they're safe. But back to the Pacific Four series. So New Zealand's going to win. I mean, it's just true. England's not there. They're the only ones that could spoil them at this point. Yeah. The gap is so big, and we're seeing it so in the Six Nations. We're in the last round, and England is clear and ahead, beating Ireland 88-10. I mean, their largest victory, almost their largest margin. They just would have had to score one more point. So England is clearly class. New Zealand is class. I think Canada is absolutely there. And this is going to be really tough for USA. We've got new coaching staff. I mean, I'm so excited about Melanie Bozeman. And we've got Ray from Canada as well. So we've got the pieces. It's just now time. So I know that they are pushing towards 2025 World Cup and then 2033, right? 2029 is in there too, but like they're really pushing towards some other goals. So this is a platform for that, I think, for the USA. And it's our only home game so far for 2024, and I will be shocked if there are any others. And I find that very surprising. In the lead up to 2025, we better have a butt ton next year in America because it's embarrassing. Same thing for Canada. They're really struggling to get matches, number one, and then to have them at home. We've got the venues, we've got the support, we've got the players. We need to have more games at home to build our clubs.
Yeah, there needs to be some strategic thought about where to put those games so that they can maximize opportunities for, you know, attendance as well as viewership on TV. I want to come back. There's kind of, you know, you guys have all brought up great points and there's some interesting questions here, but I'm going to lean on for this next one, Wendy and TJ, a little bit more just because of your familiarity with the USA squad. You know, James mentioned the importance of Sophie DeGoody, and no doubt, I mean, she is the engine that makes that Ferrari scream. Such an athlete, you know, at the eight position. Two personnel questions. They played Gabby Contorna at 10 and I think at 12, if I'm not mistaken, recently. And they've also played Kate Zachary, Captain Kate, who's one of my favorite players to watch in the USA squad. They played her at 8 and I think 13. Where do we expect to see them in the lineup in this series?
So Kate is hurt. So is Clapp. They will be available. They're hoping for the second round of matches. So the May 17th, I think, is when they're hoping Kate and Clapp will be available. But yeah, I mean, I think we've had a revolving door at 10. We haven't had a great 10 since I would say Hannah Stolba. And that's been a long time because I played with her, but you know, we've struggled, I think, at the 10 position. I think we're getting our scrum half position worked out. We also had some changes there and some flex there. And I think we're getting that one worked out. I think Ortiz is a great option. And some of the younger, there's a Beantown player. Her name is not coming to me, but
Cassidy Baggio.
Yeah, Cassidy. Yeah. They're exciting, right? They're dynamic nines, and they're really good. And I think now we for a while had passive 9 and 10. They were both distributors. Nobody was being fun and trying to go around the edge of the scrum or around the ruck and sneak around. Now I think we've got that. So I think if you've got a dynamic nine, you can have more of a distributor 10. And I think that's what Gabby is. I think she's a distributor. She's a great player. I'm not trying to diminish her at all, but I actually like her at 12 better. I like having that option where she can run the blocker passes and all of that. But I mean, Sione's got to figure this 9-10 combination out, or we're never going to be able to compete with anybody.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. I'm going to give TJ his due here because I know he has a few things to say. And then I have a question for James on that. No, just personnel issues out of Rugby Canada. But, you know, that isn't that so important to the game now that you see, like, I would say a similar thing to Billy Meeks playing in Chicago for the first couple of weeks, right? It's like you want to – I get Sam Harris's point. You want to put the ball in his hands because he's such a quality and dynamic player, but he's really not a 10. He's more of a – he can be a dangerous and – the ability to have to distribute a bit at 12. So you have two really good distributing options, ball coming off the back, et cetera. So I agree with you, Wendy. I think that's something that they can unlock. The U.S. it can be really successful. TJ, your thoughts on that?
No, well, I definitely agree with Wendy on a lot of these points, but I think the thing that we have to think of and Shone has to ask is what is a win for this Pac-4 series? I think that U.S. winning every game isn't the most important thing. I think once you look at the
score, or realistic, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see them go on a competitive tear because I think they've made a significant growth over the past few years, and I would love to touch on that a little bit later. But I think once we look at all the people that have been named, like you have your Kate Zacharys, your Hope Rogers that are all playing overseas. I think we've named a lot of young players where if Kate Zacharys out, we can give an opportunity to even a Samantha Brackett, who was playing Division II club rugby a few years ago before she went and played for the under 23 Pac South team. I was lucky enough to coach her, and now she got named in that squad. She could potentially jump in as a seven, and we move people around. I think it also comes down to what style of play USA wants to play. Do we want, like you stated, a running 10 versus a distributor? Do we want, like you stated, Wendy, a blocker line or having something that we can utilize them a little bit more, like a Levi Almua across where he's a hard ball carrier or he can distribute? So I think it all comes down to utilizing this time to blood in some of these young players and then finding what we've got out of these pieces and then kind of formulating that process. Because if it's my honest opinion, it's all gearing towards the World Cup, like we stated before. We have to give these players opportunity, and we're not going to do it by snapping our fingers and going, that's where you're going to play, especially at an international level.
Yeah, I agree. Consistency in the lineup is the key, getting players comfortable with one another. They don't have enough opportunities to play with each other, you know, like some of the other international teams do, particularly England and Ireland and New Zealand. In Australia. So getting them, maximizing those opportunities that they do have are important. James, I'm going to lean on you once here, maybe put you on the spot. I don't know, fairly, unfairly. I'm not sure. My apologies made if I do. But before we kind of turn their attention a little bit into pro rugby in the United States, aside from Sophie DeGoody, who else should we be watching on the Canadian side of things as we enter into this weekend's match?
Sure. Well, another back row player that stands out to me is Sarah Svoboda, who plays in the Premiership for Loughborough. I think Canada have a really good combo at the back row with those two. We'll see if they're starting together or not. You never know. I do like, and sorry, transitioning very abruptly to the back line, I like Olivia Apps at scrum half. She's only 25. She's looking very, very good, and she doesn't play. She still plays in Canada, as far as I know. So she hasn't got a professional contract, as far as I know, which is, well, she's a sevens player, so I suppose that counts as a professional.
She's under contract there.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, go on, Rob.
No. It's your floor.
Sure. I've lost my train of thought there. Sorry.
You're going to say Tyler Bookaboom. I know it.
Bookaboom. Yes, she's I was. It took me a couple of months to learn how to pronounce that surname, not to be proud of myself. But yes, I like Tyson Bookaboom. I can't even say it. There you go. That's another one of the forwards. I played in the forwards. I tend to keep an eye on the forwards closer than the backs. I never really pay attention to what they're doing as long as they can catch the ball.
I would say the same, but mostly it's just because I'm not that bright. So that's just enough to capture my attention as the forwards. So before we turn our attention away, you know, both Wendy and James brought up something very interesting, and that is that, you know, in countries like the United States and Canada, this challenge, we don't have a huge player pool like New Zealand and Australia do, right? We're limited. So Do we need to be a little bit more attentive to trying to allow opportunities for some of these players like a Lev Kelter or Ion Amar to play in both the sevens sphere and the 15 sphere, perhaps, you know, dare I say it, you know, bringing the whole of USA Rugby over to, you know, over to the East Coast or vice versa, over to the West Coast in Chula Vista, and perhaps giving these players a little bit more opportunity to compete at both, you know, in both codes. James, does Langford host both sevens and 15s program? I don't even know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's Langford is Rugby Canada's base. Yeah. So they're already kind of all located out there in BC. There's not, apart from, you know, there's quite a big rugby hotbed on the Atlantic coast and the Maritimes. And obviously a little bit in the built up areas like Toronto's 3 million people. So there's a bit there. But it's mainly in BC is the hotbed for Rugby Canada. And they're all based out there already. So that might not apply to Canada.
Yeah, you're right. Right. Thoughts on that, TJ or Wendy?
Well, I think from an identification standpoint, I think we've made significant inroads in the past 3 to 5 years. I think you can see Martha Danes and Katie Dowdy doing significant work instead of the recruitment and the identification of international players going from just like your bigger clubs from a couple of different areas across the country. We now have that opportunity of the under-18s, under-20s and under-23s. And I think that's become a national tournament where we are starting to really identify players that do have potential or at least people that we can kind of refine some edges. And I think Sione as well, he'll have his opinions on recruitment during his contract and other things like that. I think he comes from a really good, I guess, basis of thought where when it comes from the Wallaroos that where he was formerly coaching. And he was a big reason why they competed at the Rugby World Cup so well, because they identified a lot of amazing players and able to refine or develop the aspects as well as bringing a positive culture. If you can't tell, he coached me when I was in Australia, so I can't really be biased, I guess. But I think the USA is starting to make good progress in that retrospect, but I think there has to be more things that done. We can't just rely on that. There can be a few other ideas thrown out.
Wendy, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, TJ, you hit the nail on the head there, and I think it's the identification. And I really think that the rise of being able to watch more women's rugby, so having our D1 Elite stream, the CRA final stream, the CRC Sevens, even though that's NCR, and they're not technically affiliated with USA Rugby, now we can actually see these athletes, you know, every month or so, as opposed to once a year we got to see. So we can find these players faster, and totally agree with you that Katie Dowdy and Martha Danes are just pounding the pavement and being at every event. And I think it's also the college women's coaches, right? They're not all women, but the college coaches, they're getting budget to go find players. So we're finding them at a younger age, and we're being able to build them and develop them from a younger age. So we're not finding the 30-year-olds, you know, like Rachel Johnson's a perfect example. She'd been playing with Orsu for almost a decade before she was found, and she's a gem, you know, mm-hmm. And we needed to find her when she was 20. So we need to find these 18, 20-year-olds younger. I mean, Ireland's finding 15-year-olds. So like, we need to find these young girls playing rugby and build them up in our program, and then they can be Eagles for 10, 15, 20 years.
I agree with you on seeing the games. Watching that GCU win live just on the computer was absolutely electric. It was awesome.
Yeah, you know, I want to take time for just a moment because Wendy's mentioned NCR. Not for nothing, Ryan Ginty, Next Level Rugby, is going to be on the spot here at the NCR tournament, the Sevens tournament happening, where, you know, we have a Premier Division, we have Division One, Division Two, and we have, of course, small colleges involved. You can catch it on TRN, the main pitch, and then pitch 10 or 12, I forgot which, will be on TRN, and then Caffeine will be carrying a lot of the other matches that are happening around the area. That's, of course, going to be happening out in Washington, D.C. area, in Maryland, actually, right where the Old Glory plays. So it'll be great to watch that and see both the men's and women's sides in college rugby compete. But let's turn our attention towards the next topic, because I think we've got the Pacific Four covered. And that is the new news break on the 10th, just a few days ago, it was announced that Women's Elite Rugby, WER, is planned to emerge and play matches in 2025. This is all, as we've talked about, with regard to the Pacific Four and the United States of Rugby Canada building up towards Rugby World Cup in 2025 and 28, and of course, hosting in 2033. So let's talk a little bit about that. The league was announced. There's going to be anywhere from 6 to 8 teams. The announcement was made by Carolyn Fitzgerald, CEO and founder of Goals. And we're talking about 30 players per team, 240 professionally contracted players. It's going to be privately funded. From what we gather, and Forbes magazine talked about the fact that 50% of the pre-seed round of funding is there, and they're building towards the rest of that right now as we speak. So the first question I have for you guys is, are we ready for women's professional rugby in the United States? Is the time
coming? Yes.
That seems like a pretty easy question. Wendy,
I mean, we want you to tell us how you really feel.
Let's just move on to the next topic.
This is happening. It's amazing. I'm so excited. I can't wait to be hopefully involved in some capacity, but I think it's really cool. 6 to 8 teams in 2025. And I think the big questions everybody's had is where and how are they going to do it? Like, as far as how are they going to fit into our model, or are they going to fit? We've heard they've been on several podcasts. Jessica Hamgraff and Co McGrady were on another podcast a couple days ago, USA Happy Hour. So, they answered some of those questions slightly. They're keeping their cards pretty close to their chest, which I understand. When you've got 50% of your funding on the line, you want to be smart and make right smart decisions. But I think the strategy of 6 to 8 teams is right. And then they've mentioned they're following the PWHL, so the hockey league. And then they're also following this new volleyball. I think it's the One Elite is what it's called, league as well. So, big splash, thinking they've got lots of marketing. There'll be money behind it. And in PWHL's case, most of the teams were brand new, and in same thing in the volleyball. So I think we can look to those models to see, we have hotbeds, the East Coast, lots of great women's rugby, Midwest, lots of great women's rugby, Pacific, strong teams over there as well. So I think there's some hotbeds where you could plop a professional team in and just do great. And then I think they're going to have to look at other markets and see what they can see and where they're going to build. But my question is, are we going to have an anthem? Are we going to have a USA rugby team where they are training the next generation? They should. And I hope that's something that's on their radar, because they did it for the MLR. And I think we should start the league with a USA team.
That is the anthem, as an example, is, it was quite cobbled together quite late, but they have the opportunity to perfect it here. Like, that is such an easy win. If they let that fall through, then it's whiff. And as a
we've seen crazier things happen. So
And you're right, James. And we should, the Canada team would be great as well, right? So the PWHL is like split. So they've got a ton of Canada teams, and I think we should absolutely take advantage of the hotbed of BC rugby that you already mentioned. So we should have a Canada team and a USA team in it.
Obviously, I'm going to be biased and want a Canadian team in there. The only comparables I have is to the PWHL. The PWHL Toronto are absolutely killing it at the minute. And you're absolutely right. I think there's 6 teams in the league right now, and the 3 of them are in Canada. There's Montreal, Ottawa, and Toronto. So all the teams are based on sort of the northeast of the continents into Canada. With Rugby Canada based in BC, I'm not sure what's going to happen with that, but I want a Canadian team. Of course I do.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you. It seems like a foregone answer to it, to the question. I'm sure you do. Should that be in the first stage? Should we include a Rugby Canada team in the, or a team from Canada in the first stage? And if so, where would be the ideal location for that team to be based?
Assuming we can go anywhere in Canada, I would say it probably would be BC. They have the rugby resources there. They have the player pool out there. Rugby is more of a popular sport there, but Toronto had a professional rugby team. It was based in Toronto. It was in the MLR. Toronto is a city of 3 million people. Like I said earlier, it's the fourth biggest city in North America. There is the player. There is the people here. There are the fans here. the problem is going to be trying to get them to turn to rugby, because rugby is less of a popular sport here. Now, we do, obviously, we still have like the legacy of the Arrows. We still have lots of good men's club and men's university rugby here in Ontario. But we don't have, you know, it's massive into hockey, basketball, baseball. We've got one Canadian basketball team and one Canadian baseball team, and they're both in Toronto. We have got the PWHL team I mentioned earlier, and I think the PWHL is probably going to do wonders for women's elite rugby, because it's going to get turn people onto women's sport and realize there's so much more talent out there. But I really do think that logically it would make sense to have it in BC, but we'd have to see where the other teams are based. If all the other teams are on the East Coast and there's Canada's team in BC, it doesn't really work.
Yeah.
And I'm going to throw a question at you, TJ, because I'm at the risk of offending you as a California man. You know, kind of, because of my two children, I have my feet in both the rugby world, but also, excuse me, in the lacrosse world. And I know that, you know, the Premier Lacrosse League, or the PLL as it's called, you know, it really, they did a strategic thing with growing lacrosse in the United States, where they focused on the East Coast and the hovels where it was popular, in the cities where lacrosse was very popular, to try to grow that groundswell of youth support. Should this, you know, this endeavor, women's elite rugby, should they be a little bit more strategic about where these franchises are? Focus perhaps in the East Coast, where we have a lot of success, Brown University, Life University, you know, and Yale and Harvard, and some of those really strong college club programs, you know, and then you, of course, got Beantown, and you have some really, really strong women's, you know, club teams. Should they focus on the East Coast, minimize costs of travel, really try to manage that in the first couple of years before expanding this thing? Or, hey, what the hell, let's just make it a nationwide league. Your thoughts?
I think research has got to come down to it. Like, I think the first comment you made, me being an LA man, I just live here, bro. I just enjoy the sunshine. I was born in New York, and I'd live back there a million times over if I could. But I think location is definitely important, because they need to choose locations that will not only pull in fans, pull in revenue, but also quality facilities to train and play on. Like we were speaking a little bit before about trying to find a location to get an international match and other things like that. It's important. So I think if we throw like a wrench back in time, we talk about the old pro rugby, where they just went straight into everything and just go, we'll just figure it out. It's not going to be around for the next couple of years. So I think if they were to do a census of a study of where the most ideal places would be to not only place a professional sports team, but a women's pro rugby based team with support and facilities, I think you'll get a few different responses. So I think longevity is the most important thing. If that means that you have to start in the East Coast and kind of build the competition up, I guess another example is you already see MLR teams struggle to find quality facilities or places they want to play. Find it that makes it work. I think if you want to grow it, you can also get a social media aspect or spread the word via that. Like the amount of people that ask me about Alona Ma, who don't even know what rugby is. Let's start spreading the word first and getting the competition going. And then if they want to build a facility or a team out in the West Coast, then do that. I think if that's the way to go, where the numbers and statistics stay, then that's it for a longevity purpose. And I think, yeah, that's the way you got to go. It's all about longevity.
I completely agree with TJ there. And like, you can base these teams in one sort of region. It doesn't mean you're limited to that region. You can do, you know, exhibition games or, you know, one-off games in any city. That's probably best, because that will gauge interest in, hey, is there enough interest here to think about putting another team in the future? Like, that should be the idea. It's going to suck for people like TJ who are on the West Coast and might not get a team for a while, but that's how it needs to be done. If exactly what TJ said, again, if they spread it out all at once and the league doesn't last 2 years, the people on the West Coast aren't getting a team anyway. So like, you need to focus on growth and stability first. Well, sorry, stability and kind of consolidating what you have, then use that to build.
So does now, James, I got to ask you, and then I'm going to turn it over to Wendy because I know she has her thoughts. You know, can if Langford and BC is really the place and that would be ideal for a women's team to enter this competition, is that still pretty feasible, you know, given the travel and some of the cost, and they would be quite frankly traveling, you know, quite far, quite often. Can you still make that work? Or, you know, if this endeavor decided to keep it in the East Coast, is really, if Canada were given an opportunity to be involved, and we hope they do, do they really need to think about the regionality of this and proximity to the league?
I think the short answer is I think it's the latter, especially if you're doing what I said earlier, which is you're trying to consolidate before you start to grow too big for what you think. You can't put a team in 3,000 miles away and still be, you know, regional and try and grow from the, like, from a strong core out. You can't do that if you've got a team 3,000 miles away. Now, if Rugby Canada have any sense, they will say, hey, listen, we're all behind this team. We want it to be like a Rugby Canada and WER club, similar to what Wendy was saying earlier about having a WER version of Anthem. Why can't you do that for the Canadians too? Now, that gives you a bit more resource then if you've got the weight of Rugby Canada behind you.
Can you do something in St. John's, for example?
See, St. John's is a rugby hotbed. There's quite a few of them out in, you know, like Halifax, for example, in Nova Scotia. Like, there's quite a lot in Maritime Canada. But I'm not too familiar with how that relates to the women's game. I'm sure there are women's clubs out there, but we have nothing professional in Canada now, so it's a bit hard to gauge. It's possible. You know, I mentioned in the around the pitch section, the Atlantic Privateers, they're kind of like the club for the Maritimes right now. They've just announced they've had an academy side. So there is like an audience for it out there. Now, whether Rugby Canada or whatever this club is can actually kind of invest in making the facilities that would allow a pro rugby team to exist over there, that's another question. You know, they'd need quite a lot of startup to be able to do that.
Yeah. Wendy, I know you want to put your two cents in here. What are your thoughts about the, you know, perhaps the number of teams, 6-8 regionality? Should we spread it out? You know, also, this is going to be a centralized ownership structure from what we've read so far. You know, pick one of those, pick all of them. You're on the clock.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to think about it. We've already started to think about, I'm on the USA Rugby Senior Club Council Competitions Committee. It's like five C's there with Kristen Alberto from Philadelphia. And we've already started to talk about, say they take half the WPL teams. What does that mean? What is, like, when we look down, does that push teams down? Do we rearrange below? So I think that's more where I'm at. But I would say, interesting to think about when we look at the NWSL, the National Women's Soccer League. You know, Kansas City Current just opened their women-only stadium. Be pretty sweet to have a rugby team there. You know, so I think when you think regionality, it's very interesting in the United States, and it's very difficult where there are some facilities in the middle of the country that are available, I would say, but they're not necessarily rugby hotbeds. But, I mean, neither is Chula Vista, California, right? It's just that you build the facilities and the players will come. I can't imagine that the players on the Kansas City Current were like, I'm going to live in Kansas City one day. They did not think that, right? Like, they did not want that, right? So I'm wondering if it does become, let's build great facilities, and we know we've got a good market for sport. I think that's really interesting and compelling, as opposed to, we know that the Northeast has great women's rugby. I mean, if you look at it now, players are moving from Harvard and Stanford. Some of them are staying in the same region, but not most of them. They're moving to a team that they perceive as a better option for them, be it with career, life, whatever. You know, they just like the team or all of that as well. So I think, you know, looking at the marketing and the research is going to be really interesting here and key to have success for this league.
100%. Well, the collective wisdom that I just got from having talked with the three of you guys about this was absolutely amazing. I love it. And hopefully the fans who are listening and watching got, you know, even if you got a little morsel that you didn't know before, you can consider yourself that much more enriched by the knowledge that these three brought. And you know, before we close out the episode, we haven't given it a ton of time, but Let's give it a little bit of its due, because we've got some important club stuff happening in the United States. And before we talk about that, James, you know, with club competitions happening in the United States in the upcoming weeks, what's for North American fans, for fans in the United States, color them a little picture of what the Canadian club competition looks like.
Sure. So there's a few big men's competitions. Sorry, Wendy, I'm going to go to the men's, which is unfortunately the one I have more expert in. I'm not that.
Sure.
Obviously,
I think they play rugby, right? So I think we're good.
Yeah, I think so, as far as I know. There is the East Coast Rugby Championship is starting in the next few weeks, which is six teams across the USA and Canada. Including the Free Jacks Academy and including the Toronto Arrows Academy, who are still going. They are still playing games, which I'm very happy to hear, along with Rugby Quebec, The Rock, as you mentioned, Nova Scotia, and New Brunswick. So it's, again, pretty much as we said for the PWHL, it's all centered in the kind of northeast of the continent, but that will be handy to get along. We also have, you know, various things like the Vancouver Highlanders will be playing their rugby players challenge in this summer, where Vancouver Highlanders, for any of you that aren't familiar, are a new professional team, but they're not competing in MLR or anything. They're kind of an independent professional team, and they're going to be playing some very interesting fixtures this summer, such as against Barbados and the Canada Selects. I think they're playing Germany. I think they're playing a Canada 15s. So interesting to see where that goes. And I think it's more just kind of getting more rugby players in Canada professional exposure, which is always good. Yeah, and again, also in BC is, you know, there's the BC Premier League, which is always going on, and the Coast to Coast Cup, which is another one, which isn't just BC. You know, the Atlantic Privateers will be there for that. Yeah. The Toronto Arrows Academy won it last year. I'm not sure if they're going to be coming back, but that's kind of the big cross-country competition in the summer.
Well, and again, more collective wisdom happening, especially north of the border. I want to talk a little bit about what's happening in the club scene now. The weekend of May 4th and 5th, we're going to have a lot of rugby action happening across the United States. D1, we've got San Diego versus Seattle and Vegas. We've got Houston versus Utah in Austin, Texas. We already know that Pittsburgh won the semis from the northern region. They beat Columbus, so they're on. They did that in November. And then we've got from the Atlantic region, we got Nova, who is playing Philadelphia, and that's in Wilmington, Delaware. So a lot of rugby happening. Wendy, who do you like in this comp? Then I'll go to TJ. Who do you like in this comp in D1?
Yeah, I think this is really interesting. Like you mentioned, we'll have, you know, we've got a new champion in the Northern, Pittsburgh Forge. It was Metropolis Valkyries last year. Atlantic is mostly the same teams, except for Philadelphia gets in there. There's been some contention over the years of how many NERFU teams and how many EPRU teams get in. So I think they've got the right balance there now in Atlantic. I think Philadelphia is really interesting. They were a powerhouse not too long ago. So I think they're really going to give Nova a push. But I think Nova's going to squeak through. Pacific is the same as last year, so I think we'll see, San Diego get through. But Seattle's going to have a lot to say about that. They did just drop out of the BC Prem. They're not going to get to the postseason, so that's a bummer for them. Sharks Utah is interesting. They don't have a crossover this year in the Red River Frontier. Those regions are playing separately, so those teams haven't played each other yet. So this will be the first time they meet. And it was an interesting Frontier League. You know, Glendale focused more on their WPL side. They've got a D1 side, but they're just not necessarily focusing on it as much. And then Boulder, kind of middle of the road for them. So I think it comes down to Surfers and I'm going to say Nova going to be in the final, I think.
TJ, what do you got?
Yeah, when it comes to the Atlantic and the Northern, I can only go off my past experiences, whether it's coaching them at Sevens Nationals or other things like that. But Nova have always been just such a competitive team, and they've got some incredible athletes and some great rugby IQ. So I think they're going to be heading through. I think for the Frontier Red River, I think Utah Vipers, I'm going to back them. We got to play them in a preseason game earlier this year, and I got to chat to their coach, and they were receiving back a few players from injury and also for personal reasons as well coming into the back end of their season. So I think if they were competitive then, they're just going to be just as competitive now. So I think it's going to be amazing. And Yeah, I definitely go with San Diego as well. There's a reason why they've been such a competitive team over the past few years. Seattle's going to have their hands full. I'm picking San Diego for that one.
Well, there you have it, folks. If you're putting money on the line there down in Vegas where some of the matches are happening, you got some insider perspective around the horn here. I want to go quickly to D2, and we have a lot of action happening, a lot of quarterfinal action happening, some of it the weekend of the 12th and the 13th, some of it happening the weekend of the 4th and the 5th. We got NorCal, Sacramento versus SoCal, Los Angeles. I know TJ's probably got some thoughts on that one. We got the Southwest. You got Vegas versus Pacific Northwest champ Portland. Out of the Gulf Coast, you got Tampa versus Charleston. And you've got Dallas, Quinns versus Knoxville. Then you got in the Northern region, you got South Buffalo versus the Boulder Bay. Is it the Babes? I cannot read my own writing.
That's the one. Yeah, it's Babes. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And then you've got Grand Rapids versus the St. Louis Sabres. And that has yet to be confirmed where that Northern competition is happening and confirmed even, I think, the competitors. But I'm sure Wendy knows a little bit more than I do on that one. And confirm.
Oh, it's at Chicago Blaze. I think you might be looking at my graphic and I need to update it. So thank you for the reminder.
Okay.
great facility to have a game at. That's awesome. I love that field.
Yeah, I love it.
I'll be there.
I refereed there. Those pitches are gorgeous.
Yeah. Thank you. I think I own a blade of grass at that facility.
Nice.
So I go out there and clip it every once in a while. And then, of course, the Atlantic is Phoenixville versus Albany and Severn River versus New Haven. And that'll be, that one's already been decided. It's Phoenixville versus Severn River on the 4th in the quarterfinal. So thoughts here, who we suspecting coming out of this one, Wendy?
Yeah, I think this is really interesting. You know, it's quite a shakeup from last year where we've got, a new Northern champ again. Milwaukee didn't make it to the postseason. So we've got South Buffalo. Boulder Babes are pretty normal to be there. Grand Rapids are new, not new to the region, but new to the Super Regional. And then the Sabres are returning from last year. So I think, I think I'm going to put my money on South Buffalo. They're looking to be the most consistent out of that region. And then when we go to Pacific, new champion again, Atomic Sister didn't make it they made it to the Las Vegas round. So, they made it to their Union Championship round, but they're not making it to the Super Region. But I think Sacramento is a team that I'm going to put a pin on. They're physical. They play very hard rugby. And I think they sometimes surprise their opponents who aren't used to that. But then also Los Angeles, brand new WD2 team. Really exciting, I think, too. So I think that's going to be good. Gulf Coast, same as last year. I think it's going to be tough to beat Knoxville, the defending champions overall. And then Atlantic, Severn River. I think, looking at that, I think Phoenixville will make it tough for Severn River, but I think Severn River will get out of that Super Regional.
TJ, who are you backing in a D2?
I'm not even going to try and pick a team out of the Northern, the Atlantic, because when I look at D2, I know some of them, but I'm just going to pick by the names. I'm going to pick the Boulder Babes, baby. Let's go. It's a great name to go by. But I think Severn River, I've heard a lot about them, and I think they can put up a pretty, pretty hard fight. So I'll back them to go through to the final stage. I think Knoxville as well. I think them and Dallas Quinns, it's going to be an interesting match. I think Dallas Quinns haven't had the best consistency over the past few years, but they've definitely always been a solid team. So I'll probably back Knoxville as well. But yeah, definitely want to give roses to Los Angeles. They're a brand new team, and I think they've done tremendous things this season with an amazing coaching staff. I definitely think that with their balance of finesse and also aggressive play, I think they might topple over Sacramento, but Sacramento are no joke. I think I'm picking them go all the way through to that stage of the Pacific. So shout out to LA.
Nice. I got to ask this one question, and I hope I'm not putting James to sleep here, because we've been talking a lot about rugby in the United States club rugby, that is. But I got to ask this question. I mean, we have quarterfinals happening, one set in November, that would be in the Midwest. We have another set that happened on the 20th, just this last weekend as of the recording, the 4th and then the 11th. We have all these different dates, again, partly due to, seasonality. Does the calendar need to be a little bit more synchronized at the club rugby level, or do we just got to, play what's in front of us in terms of the weather and the conditions and the seasonality?
Well, I won't speak for Wendy, but I think she made an excellent point regarding the calendar of what this WER competition is going to pose, what players are going to move, and what that kind of solidifies for the calendar. So I think if the first time in the history of US rugby, if they can come together with a professional competition and work together with the clubs as well and try and make a schedule that works around all for all people, in my personal opinion, I think they could find a great balance where we could have a solidified club season and also we could get the best of both worlds with the professional aspect. But that's just me. I think it would make it a lot easier when it comes selection time as well for your USA teams. But who knows, it all is going to come down to what this WER looks like. But I'd love to hear Wendy's thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think about resources right off the bat. We have a finite amount of high performance referees. We have great referees across the nation. But I would say that, you know, the pool of top level referees that you want doing all these matches, including all the men's matches that happen at the same venues, in most cases, that's probably my concern, is that we would be stretching those resources. But I do think that, you know, we know our championship weekend, May 17th and 19th, it's in Austin this year, and we're hoping to book that for 2 years. We're working with the SEC on that. But knowing the date, we can then work backwards from that. And then we're probably all going to land on similar timeframes, right? You know, some regions have more teams or less teams. So that does, if you go a quarterfinal round versus a semifinal round, all those pieces happen. But I think we're probably going to start ending up on the same weekends. But I do think it's interesting too that, you know, in the Pacific, they're playing on Friday, the 3rd, just because for religion, they're trying to allow their players not to play on Sunday. So they play a Friday or Saturday. So there's all of these kind of just little things that happen across the board. But I think if we could have it all on the same weekend, it's interesting. There's a lot of rugby to watch. It makes it really interesting to have on the same weekend. It's a lot easier to market. So it's interesting. I think it's possible to all be on the same weekend, but I just worry about our resources.
Well, I think we could have split this into two separate episodes. Unfortunately, I wanted to be really sensitive to the time that both, you know, that all three of you guys had. And so I want to maximize, again, the collective wisdom here. But before we go away, I'm going to tap James on the shoulder and just ask him, you know, what's happening MLR stats wise. What are you seeing going on? Are there any big milestones, anything that fans should be aware of as we, you know, have gotten through the halfway point of the season just about and look towards the back end? Turn on that mic, my man.
Technical difficulties aren't just you, you there, Rob.
Okay.
Yeah, there are a fair few little milestones that were achieved in round 8. You know, some teams, like you mentioned, are halfway through their season. Some of them aren't yet because they've had a bye. We're coming up to the last round of byes, so everything should kind of start to even out. But one of the main things I saw was Seattle beat the Free Jacks at home in one of probably the best games of the season so far. And it was the first time that New England had recorded 0 table points since round 2 of 2023. So that's 20 regular season games. Yeah. They picked up at least one. Now, okay, most of those they won. Let's be honest. They're an incredible outfit. But the first time since round 2 against San Diego Legion on the 26th of February last year. And I think that was one of their 2 losses that season. On the subject of the Free Jacks, there was Carl Sequeira. They had an Eagle-themed day for Carl Sequeira. He is the second Free Jacks player to earn 50 caps for the club. Now, Paula Banacana did earn his 50th MLR cap, but he played for Houston for a little bit before moving to New England. So he hasn't quite got 50 there yet. And on the subject of 50, there were a few other players reached 50 with their respective clubs, including JP Duplessis for the gold, just for you there, Rob. And he's the 7th gold player to earn 50 caps for the gold. It was a bit of a shock to me. I thought he'd earned 50 quite a while ago with the gold.
Yeah.
He played a fair few for the Legion too, I think. So
yeah, he didn't actually start with them until 2021, I believe, was the first season with gold in San Diego. So yeah.
He'd already had two and a bit seasons in MLR. Mm-hmm. Tomo Tuivasa for the Utah Warriors, and it was also the 7th for his club to earn 50 caps. And then we move on to kind of scoring, which is Nate Augsburger sets a new Chicago Hounds record for individual points in a game. Now, that is their third hat trick in three games, but Augsburger had a 7-pointer. So he got 17 points rather than 50.
I'll have to bring that up with him when I see him here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's even aware of that, but yeah. Obviously the Hounds are quite a new franchise, so 17 it is. Mike Teo, I had an MLR stats post about this earlier this week, became the third player in MLR history to reach 30 tries. Now, the first is obviously Dylan Fawcett on 48. And Rickard Hatting on 42. Mm-hmm. So it's quite a long way back from the top two, but he is the third player to reach 30. And there's a whole bunch of players right behind him.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing stuff. And again, you can check out James Dealey at MLR Stats, both on Twitter and on Instagram, right?
It's MLR Stats on Instagram, and it's my personal Twitter at the minute. I haven't got around to setting one up for that, so it's at Jam okay. Delay.
And don't go to his personal Facebook; it's totally personal. but you know, I'm sure he—I don't know—he doesn't need any more friends that already has. And of course, TJ Olson is at the Bonus Point Podcast. When you hit your next pod, covering stuff happening in the Pacific?
Man, we actually got a couple of busy days. I'll be interviewing, luckily enough, Jason Emery this week from RFCLA for the RFCLA fan podcast. Cool. So picking his brain about his career and coming over to America, obviously, is titled with New York. And then we've got a couple episodes recording this coming week now. We've also reached halfway through the Super Rugby season as well. So stay tuned. Episodes are coming and some more content coming your way.
Awesome. Awesome. Check out the Bonus Point Podcast. For sure. And finally, Wendy Young, prolific in terms of getting stuff out there. I mean, mouth moves a mile a minute in every episode I see, just so she can get all the information out there. And you're very popular on Reddit. Just get, all the platforms. Anything coming up here that, you know, people should be paying attention to when they check out the your Scrum Half Connection?
Yeah, I think we hit the Pacific Four Series. I think that's huge. And then, of course, that leads into the WXV. So that tournament happening and starting in September, that leads into the 2025 Rugby World Cup. So big year for the women, lots going on. I think that we have some potential England and New Zealand. We haven't announced the official date yet, but they'll be playing in September in Twickenham. So that's really exciting. And they're looking to, you know, bust some more attendance records. I think the record's 56,057. I'm doing that off the top of my head, but trying to bust that. So I think that's really exciting. I'm looking at tickets for sure. I'm like, I could go to September. Let's go.
I might have a trip home for that one.
Yeah, go. Right. Like, that's a good excuse to go to
no
London
red cards. Nice time of that's year. All I hope for. No red cards.
Yeah. Oh, don't.
So yeah, at YSC Rugby, it looks like you can check Wendy out and stay plugged into the women's game all the damn time. So you know, we love it. We love what all you guys do. Make tremendous just contributions to the rugby community here in North America. This game has come along because people like you and your willingness to join our podcast and make what we do just a little bit better is absolutely amazing. I want to thank all three of you for joining this episode. And I think we pretty much killed it. Went about 12 minutes longer than normal. So no doubt a lot of stuff to consume. Thank you very much to all three of you. Again, we'd like to thank Rugby Now and Shop MLR for supporting what we do, which is trying to grow rugby one fan at a time. And with that, we're going to take you out, and we hope that you join the Rugby Rant Podcast next week as we bring you more about rugby in North America, and specifically, we're going to focus a bit on the MLR, and I'll see you around the turn.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.